hear the final interview on day, like, one and a half?
This is day two.
Day two? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I forgot.
You're doing good. And I'd like to interview you before we get started, if you don't mind.
Are you all right with that, Marcus?
I'm okay.
Yeah, all right. So how did you get to be the MC of this event?
Luck. Yes.
Okay. So if you haven't been out to my Twitter feed, it's at JB Fintech. You can see that he has been the master of ceremonies for this entire event, including coming in and introducing all of the global people who have difficult names.
Yes.
Also, the Lederhosen dancers with the Schuhplatz.
Schuhplatten.
Yeah. So this is, by the way, everyone. This is Marcus Sabadello, who is from here in Austria.
Sabadello. That's not so hard to pronounce.
Not hard at all.
It's very easy to pronounce. So tell me, like, what's it like backstage up there? Is there just like a whole bunch of people with clogs and cheese everywhere and accordions and
all that?
Is it like the backstage of the Muppets?
A lot like the backstage of the Muppets.
Ah, and you're like
yeah,
Kermit.
Yeah.
You're like Kermit.
I'm like Kermit.
I love it.
Or maybe Gonzo is better. Gonzo.
Yeah. You blow up something.
Sometimes, yes.
No,
yeah, that happens.
That's great. Mm-hmm. No, I thought this morning with Susan Ettlinger was really good.
She was awesome.
A great introduction.
I told you to go.
I did. I was there. I was there. He slept in, but I was there. And I saw you interview her afterwards. Mm-hmm. I tried like heck to get you to ask my question.
Were you the GDPR
I was trying to get you to ask the GDPR. I'm still going to ask her when I find her. I don't know if she's still here.
I'll give you the contact.
My track is... I'm going to find her. Well, there's my interview for you. So,
well, thank you. To
tell everyone that, are you going to do this again? Do you think you'll be invited back? It's like the Oscars, right?
I don't know. It's up to the
I'll put
folks.
My vote in. I think you're really doing a good job. So.
Thank you very much. Wow.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
It was from humble beginnings when we both, I was one of your very first customers right out of the gate. And here you are today, just all grown up
and doing a great job. I've graduated or something like that.
Yeah. I love the introductions you did for the groups that won the awards. And it's cool because it appears you really understand the awards. The women's group, that was fantastic. I met her last night, Susan Collins, I think. Is that her name?
Sue Mitchell,
excuse me.
And Kaylin Ostrowski. Kaylin, I apologize. I think it's Ostrowski.
I just wanted to get to say
well, I don't have the. If I have her name in front of me, I can pronounce it. Yes, because
okay.
I interviewed her last year.
Ah, gotcha.
So yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk to you guys.
Sure.
How's the show gone? John Best, by the way, from Best Innovation Group.
Yep.
Marcus, I can't remember your last name. Sorry.
Sabadello. Marcus Sabadello.
Sabadello.
He works very closely on CU Ledger.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah,
very
so
cool.
Marcus
a little blockchain.
Has been, with me from the inception of CU Ledger when I kind of had my moment and we kind of sat down and he gave, he talked about something that kind of spawned an idea. Later on, I tracked him down and we were in Silicon Valley and I said, hey, I think this is it. And he went, yeah, that'll work. And that was about, that's about the, as far as he goes with it.
What's your take on that, Marcus?
Well, I'm a local here, right? I live here in Vienna and I heard there's a great conference and I always have good food and nice buffets at the conference, so that's why I came. That's why
incentive. I like that. Yeah.
No, I've been working on digital identity for a long time, and last year I got to meet John and got introduced to this idea of credit unions and the community here, and I didn't know much about that. I didn't know much about finance and this industry, but I got to know it more and more, and it's an exciting community. I like the cooperative spirit that's happening here.
Yeah, I always like to talk to people who are brand new to it and just get their reaction and like what do they think of it, because it's an interesting model.
Yeah, like I said, it's nice how people here really like to work together, right? It's not a competition like it is with traditional banks or in most industries, but people are trying to solve common problems and exchange knowledge, experience, and try to make something work together. And CU Ledger kind of fits in the whole blockchain.
Let's talk about CU Ledger. You're talking about blockchain. Would you do to talk to today? Oh, good
Marcus
for you.
I just finished.
How did it go?
I felt like it went pretty well. We really did sort of a primer on blockchain, try to explain it. It's a difficult subject. And so our goal here was to educate and also to encourage them to go see CUledger.com, which I think we did. But what I found was, to Marcus's point, is that, I think Brian's opening remarks about this being a movement, now more than ever, the ultimate disruption opportunity we have is collaboration. And it turns out that this DLT technology is like the internet all over again. And DLT standing for distributive ledger, which is kind of akin to blockchain. Mm-hmm. And the only way it works is if we have a variety of organizations that want to collaborate and work together. Mm-hmm. And it's tailor-made for the industry. So it was really neat to see so many people. What we had, people from Kenya, people from Canada, people from Trinidad and Singapore. All over the world, you know, Singapore, come up and talk to us afterwards and, hey, could we get involved? And so, yeah, that's just so valuable.
You're starting a global movement, John.
It wasn't me. It was a lot of other people. Hampel, who carried the flag.
Yeah. Bill there, yeah.
I gotta you know, talk about Bill. He carried the American flag in the Olympic-like ceremony. There was no lighting of a torch, though. I thought you would come out just running at the end with a torch. I don't understand.
There's fire hazards.
Is there still opportunity for that? Do you put it out at the end or something?
I think we'll just carry a flashlight or something. A little bit safer than fire inside a building.
But Mountain West also, Scott's here. And there was a gentleman from Mountain West who was honored.
I saw him.
Obviously, yeah. His daughter was here. And yep. Dean, who's... Yep. Done so much for the industry. So it's not just us, but we've been fortunate to have an amazing team, you know, to work with. So it's been a lot of fun. And I was really excited to come here because of getting to speak to because I know this is a global opportunity, but also because I knew Marcus was here. And we actually spent a couple of days working and coding away on the Sea Ledger stuff.
Oh, so. Really? All right. Good deal.
What was your reaction from people when you started talking about blockchain? What's their understanding? Is it kind of the same as it is in America, or do people have a better understanding of it here, or is it the same? Or because there's still a lot of people who are like, sure. Block what? What is this stuff?
Yeah, it's very typical, right, that we see people equate it to Bitcoin. That's
the negative connotation.
Yeah, right. That's the number one place to go. So I think I started off with, you know, I think I made them all say, Blockchain is not Bitcoin. Right. So they could sort of get that idea. But I found the reaction to be very positive.
Good.
What did you think?
Well, I think more and more people understand that blockchain is not Bitcoin. There's now a period where of imagination where a lot of people are trying new things other than cryptocurrencies, other than Bitcoin, trying to apply this technology, which is really about achieving consensus in a cooperative way. About basically anything. It can be a consensus about a financial transaction, it can be about identity, it can be about smart contracts, voting. You can do a lot of different things. So like John said, it's like the internet all over again. Now we're trying to figure out what else can we do with it other than Bitcoin. Well,
and Marcus is an identity expert. Mm-hmm. So, you know, CU Ledger really has hung its hat on sovereign identity, the concept of sovereign identity. And you've been doing this, the identity portion, for like 10 years, right?
We've been doing identity for a long time, and we've always tried to figure out how can we put individuals in control of their identity, right? Which we don't have today. Today we know identity is the new oil, and we're not the customer, we're the product of Facebook and Google, and they make money off our data, off our identity. We don't know what happens with our identity. So for a long time we've been trying to work on technologies that change that give us as the individuals more control over what happens with identity. But now that we have blockchain, that was the missing piece. That's a new component that really allows us to enable this. It allows us to create an identity that belongs only to me. That's not an account in somebody else's database. It's not a record in the Facebook data center, but I can create it by myself, and I don't depend on anyone to give it to me, right? Identity should be something that comes from me, and blockchain is the piece, sort of
the enabler,
the tool that allows this.
So let's cut to the chase here. How does a credit union benefit from blockchain?
Sure. Well, there's a couple different ways they can benefit. The first one is going to be in efficiency and safety, right? So if you think about today, a good example would be a password, right? So if you work with a credit union that has a common core like Jack Henry or DNA, there's or even some of the home banking products, there's really only one system that says Mike Lawson's Mike Lawson. Mm-hmm. So when you log in, you validate yourself. And if that system's not there, it doesn't matter that everything else is up behind it. It's almost like even if everybody's inside the bank and all the tellers are open, if the front doors are locked, there's no, you know, you're not getting any service.
Right.
And so the first step is this universal identity, this portable identity. I like to think of it like this. You know, Elon Musk has done this amazing thing where, you know, his stated goal is to go to Mars. But what he created in his, you know, the thing that's the big innovation is a reusable rocket.
Right.
Right. So imagine that you flew here. Right. And as soon as you stepped off the plane, they torched the plane. They burned it down.
Like, what are you doing?
Right. Well, how much, you know, that would make flight very costly. Mm-hmm. That's where we are in space. Right. And so Elon has gone through and made a reusable rocket. And so you never watch the rockets launch and a couple things fall off of it. And you think, where are those things going?
I'm not going to get that back.
You just think, well, those are garbage. Right. Well, that's like $1 billion worth of garbage. Mm-hmm. What if it could land itself and you could reuse it? So what is our reusable rocket, right? What's our reusable rocket in the financial industry? And I would tell you it's identity, because we just keep burning it. We keep creating a new one over and over again. We create ones for the staff. Mm-hmm. We create ones when we add a new account system. You know, for the listeners, we're live streaming this. You know, if you're commenting on this thing, are you happy with the number of passwords and users you have?
No.
Right, because you have so many. Mm-hmm. And so not only that, but it creates a security problem. It creates a privacy problem. You can be correlated. I asked in the last meeting, how many people use the same username across a whole bunch of websites out of convenience? We have, what, half the place, more than half the place hold up their hand. That means that all those companies now know they can share that username and go, oh, well, you know, he's a Google Plus user, he's a Facebook guy, he does this, he does that. Mm-hmm. That's correlation. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't have your identity, someone else can put A, B, and C together to get D, you know, to determine who you are. Mm-hmm. Whereas in our world, you know, with identity, if we make it a portable thing that can be reused, mm-hmm. much like the rocket, mm-hmm. that's the first value for Cradians. The second value is, let's take something, a complex process like loan participation. So we did a good 2 months of work on loan participations as it relates to the ledger, because we were looking for use cases that were, you know, strong for the ledger. So in today's world, if let's say that there's a Cradian out there who's got a fantastic opportunity for a business loan for a member, mm-hmm. but it's out of scale for them, not enough liquidity, right? So they may go out and look for other partners, mm-hmm. right, to make that loan.
Right.
Well, the challenge with the current way to do it is it's a little manual. So that CFO may know some other CFOs, and they kind of get together, and it sort of happens. And that's what we discovered. We interviewed, 10 credit unions, something like that?
Wow.
Yeah, and as I went through each interview, we discovered there was so much manual work. The first manual work is, let's say that you want to participate. Now you have to get all the materials over to the other credit union so that they can evaluate the loan. They can't just use your decisioning, so we discovered that. We discovered that once you book the loan, let's say you get the loan done, okay, now if there's a Cradian who's the lead participant, they are responsible for divvying up the dividends and sending it to everybody. Mm-hmm. They also have to give all the reporting. So if it's a big loan, let's say a Cradian puts a couple mil into it, that's a huge loan mm-hmm. for any of our organizations. Mm-hmm. Their board's going to want to know when it is, so the head one has to do all this. What Marcus and I discovered was distributive ledger was so perfect for this. It was perfect for the bidding process. So now you don't have to go find partners. You could put it on the ledger, and you could use smart contracts that say, hey, if the loan's within these parameters, I want to bid on it. And it would automatically bid. And so Cradians with liquidity could be married up with Cradians who have loan opportunity. So that was huge. The next step was, one of the problems is no one ever really knows the balance of this participated loan other than the lead participant. But if we stored that in the ledger, now the math of figuring out who gets the dividends, all of those things, it was almost like custom made for the ledger opportunity. It was like the two things plus the identity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another example of that efficiency. You could do the same thing with indirect loans, you know. So there's so many things. And you know, there's an American Banker article not too long ago. It was a podcast that was out there, and he was talking about how banks need to start looking at this now. It's not a wait and see thing, because it will change your internal processes. And so you need to have some understanding of how that might change in order to prepare for it. And I'll throw it at Marcus from, you know, I know you looked at some other use cases with me as well. Any other thoughts on the loan participation portion of it?
Well, loan participation, like you said, the interesting part about that is the smart contract. So a way to automate some of the steps to reach an agreement and then to conduct transactions. The part that I find most interesting in is everything that relates to identity, and you've talked about that a little bit. Maybe one interesting thing you can do here is, so you can control correlation. You can know which party knows what about you. But sometimes you want this kind of correlation. Sometimes you want to say this credit union and this credit union, maybe my university. You want to share something with all of them. You want them to know some of your identity, right? Like the verifiable claims we were talking about. Verifiable claims is a technology that allows you to have a verified statement about your identity, something that can be trusted, right? Like my address, where do I live, or did I graduate from university? These are things that I don't just say about myself. They are not self-attested, but they are attested by the post office or by the university. They verify a part of my identity. That's called a verifiable claim. And I can take this verifiable claim and present it to many different places. I can present it to a credit union. I can present it to my, for a loan, for example. Mm-hmm. I can create it to my employer. different parties, but I only have to get verified once, right? So that's what makes things a lot simpler, but also there's also more security and more privacy because I can control who I share that with.
Well, and great I'll give point. An example. So this is a question we've been asking all day, and I always love the answer. Does Amazon need to know your address?
No.
They don't? Have I answered this already?
I think so.
Yeah, so why wouldn't they need to know your
address? Well, they have all this other information on me, and whenever I go to their website, they already know what I've bought, what my interests are, so they're basically, it's just one big mass cross-sell.
But if, but if people want to ship something to you...
Well, yeah, they need that address,
But they don't, really. All they really need is... The only person that really needs your address is the post office.
True.
Right? So if you had some sort of, pseudonym or cryptonym, let's say that it was... like an identifier for an identifier for your plane ticket. You get the three, the six letters, WJKRAV. You hope it makes some sense so you can remember it, right? So let's say you had that, so that you put that in as your address. When they went to ship to you, they would just put that in, and the post office would go, oh, that's Mike Lawson. He lives at 111, Hilltop Lane. Mm-hmm. And that way, your privacy would be protected. Mm-hmm. And that way, if someone ever broke into... unless they break into the post office, and then even then they still won't know because they should be decentralized. Which of the
it's ideas. A code, yeah.
Right. So that's how you that could.
I like that idea. Okay.
Well, but that's the idea. That's when I say processes are going to change. Mm-hmm. That's the way people need to be thinking.
Right.
It's very different.
These things are very relevant also to the upcoming GDPR, right? That's going to be a big thing here in Europe, the General Data Protection Regulation in the EU. Mm-hmm. Which, for example, has rules about data minimalization, meaning that a certain party should only have the amount of information that they need. That's John's example about Amazon, right? If Amazon doesn't need my address, they shouldn't have it. So these technologies, they also help with compliance with the GDPR requirements.
Which includes consent.
Consent,
We were, and that's why I wanted to ask about Susan Ettlinger about GDPR. Mm-hmm. So all this big data that everyone has, but by the way, we know the answer. We know that really it's going to be another inversion. So you have data. Right now, the idea is if you want to find out something in relation to you and everyone else, you put your data in the pool and they crunch it. So let's say you want to know how you rank amongst your peers on savings, right? So you put your savings information in, the thing crunches it and says you're 54th, right? But what if instead of that, the algorithm could be sent to you? You run it locally. They don't need to know anything about how much money you have. Mm-hmm. You send back the results, mm-hmm. and then they put it into the... See how that changes? Yeah. It's the same thing.
Totally.
This is a complete inversion of everything that's been done. Mm-hmm. And we now have the processing power for that. We have the processing power on our phones that where somebody could send that algorithm down, it could be run locally, mm-hmm. and then it could just send back just those results to get put back into everything else.
Yep.
It's going to be a really big game changer.
But we have to, speaking of game changer, but you have to change minds as well in order to make that inverse happen.
Well,
so, and I
here.
Think it's definitely possible, especially with the younger generation coming up. And
you're pointing to Marcus like he's the younger generation. You don't know how old Marcus is.
A couple years younger than you. Just a couple.
He's older than me. This is like...
Really?
He's the same age as my dad.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding.
Looking good.
Just kidding. I just wanted to mess with him. But the point is, your point is right on. So if you think of a credit union as sort of a ship in the ocean, right? What we're here to do is we don't want a 180 turn, We're not looking to flip them around.
Right.
But 3 degrees now to understand this mm-hmm. makes, over time makes the difference between, landing in Europe and Africa. Mm-hmm. And so plotting that course is really important for everyone.
3 degrees over time will eventually equal 180 degrees.
Right. But that can also, 3 degrees over time can put you somewhere you don't want to be
true.
If you're changing it in the right direction.
Yeah, if you're going too fast.
So it's really about evaluating these things and making small corrections, understanding what the opportunity is.
Yeah.
And that's what we're here to try to help. We don't proclaim to have all the answers, but I will say we've made it quite a ways down the road, And thanks to Marcus and other identity professionals that have been super helpful to help me learn. I kind of bring the financial knowledge, but be nowhere without these guys.
So. Last question here. Next steps. What are we doing? Next steps for you guys, next steps for credit unions. Where do we go from here?
So CU Ledger is about to put a business plan out for review.
Okay.
And there'll be some meetings for credit unions that want to invest in a QSO entity. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in that, go to CUledger.com. Mm-hmm. And then next steps for Marcus and I are to keep making things. That's where we're going now, is to code more.
Keep
woohoo!
and
keep typing.
Make it real.
Make it real. I like that. All right. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for making this real.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Appreciate
for
the time.
Us. It's awesome.
It's always an adventure, like I said, Marcus.
Well done, lad. You're doing as the MC here.
Thank you very much.
Marcus and I both noticed it yesterday. It was fantastic. So.
Oh, good. They didn't give me the big hook. They didn't yank me off stage. So I think that's a positive sign.
But I'd really like to see you dance with the Schuhplatzen.
I will give it a shot. I'll see if they have an extra one in the back.
If they have an extra spare pair of Lederhosen. Get hooked up.
I'm afraid I'm going to blow out a knee if I do that type of stuff.
I think you can do it. I really think you can do it.
I think I could too, but something bad might happen. I'll end up leaving in an ambulance.
That's why I'll be filming. So it'll all be okay. We'll put it right on the CU broadcast. Everyone will
live stream it, man.
The most hits you ever got.
I know, exactly. Thank you. Ever. All right.